Hi, and welcome to School Choice Week, presented by Secular Eclectic Academic Homeschoolers. My name is Blair Lee, and tonight I will be interviewing one of my favorite secular homeschoolers, Meg Grooms.
Aww.
Hi, Meg. How are you?
Hi, Blair. I'm great. How are you?
I am doing great. I have been having a lot of fun watching you and your family in the snow.
Oh, isn't that crazy?
It is really crazy.
We're Floridians at heart. We lived in Florida for 20 years, and last year we moved across the country, and we're in the Pacific Northwest now, and they told us we were going to get 1 to 3 inches of snow last night. We woke up to 14 inches.
Oh, my gosh.
It was insane, but we had a lot of fun.
Yeah, you look like you were having a lot of fun. This is School Choice Week, everyone. We're going to have 5 podcasts. Tonight's podcast is Homeschooling 101. And we asked Meg if she would be the interviewee for this because she has a wonderful book about Homeschooling 101. And you've homeschooled one daughter. You've got 2 kids that have graduated, correct? From
yes,
high
one
school.
One daughter and one son. Yep.
Okay, cool. And then how many kids are you homeschooling right at home right now?
Well, I have 4 at home that are homeschooling. One's a preschooler, so technically I have 3 of compulsory age, and then I have the 2 who have graduated.
Okay, so you are a very experienced homeschooler, I would have to say. Now, have you always homeschooled all your kids?
We did. We homeschooled from the start, from the time our oldest was of compulsory age. There was a period of 2 years in which my oldest 2 did attend public school. They went to middle school, and then they quickly asked to come home again. So aside from those 2 years where 2 of them went to school, yes.
Wow. So that leads me to my first question. So, most people think of me as I've homeschooled a long time. I've homeschooled for 11 years continuously. Mm-hmm. But my son went to kindergarten. And so 12 years ago, I was talking to friends, deciding what I was going to do. And I actually talked 2 of my girlfriends into homeschooling just from listening to me trying to figure out what I was going to do. And I got cold feet. I was...
Mm-hmm.
So nervous that I put my son in kindergarten, and it was his kindergarten teacher on his second parent teacher conference. He was an early reader, and it was during No Child Left Behind. So the only child who was really not getting very much attention was him. He was he went to a little. We were in a little town where there was only 1 class in kindergarten, and that year the teacher had a lot of kids who weren't reading at all, didn't even recognize mm-hmm. what the letters were. And she said to me, "Why don't you homeschool?" So mm-hmm. my question to you is, if we could go back in time, what advice would you give me 12 years ago as I nervously debated what to do and finally put my son in kindergarten?
That's a great
only to pull them out at the
question.
End of kindergarten forever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's great. And you know, my biggest piece of advice, the one thing I would change is especially with my older 2, I made this mistake. I started formal work too soon. I expected sit down work. I even made my oldest daughter raise her hand. I am not lying. I think about that. I'm like, why was I doing that? It was so insane. But, you know, I don't know if you know this or not, but homeschooling was not my idea. I kind of went along reluctantly, and I was so in the school brain mode that all I knew is what we did, and I was very regimented, and we were all miserable. So my biggest suggestion, biggest piece of advice is take your time, get to know your kids some more, let them play some more, but through the play and through interaction, you learn their learning style and you learn about the things that they love. And then you can take that and you can turn that into their education. So that is my biggest piece of advice. My second biggest piece of advice for the new homeschooler, put your pocketbook away. It is so tempting to spend so much money, curriculum and manipulatives and online field trips. There are so many resources. If I bought everything I wanted, and I have in the past, I would be spending thousands of dollars. And not that there's anything wrong with that. There isn't. It's just that I wasted 3/4 of what I bought. It sat on the shelf because it wasn't the right product at the right time, or it wasn't the right learning style, or it didn't work for me. So that would be my second piece of advice. My third?
I have now, Sean's in 11th grade, and so now, I mean, I know him, and so now when I spend money on something, I waste almost no money, but, oh, I agree. Spelling became the bane of our existence. Sean is still a struggling speller despite being, you know, it's the one subject he's always been, that really is a weakness of his. And he just doesn't, he's a very phonetic reader, started reading early, and the amount of money I have spent on spelling programs, and it was finally found sequential spelling, which is really inexpensive. But, I mean, so sometimes you have to try until you find what's right, but I agree with you. It's so easy to spend a bunch of money. It's just so easy without knowing your child's learning style. And once you know that, you know, that's why now when I spend money on Sean, it's money I you know, like he loves to write. And so he's in a pricey writing program this year. It's the only thing we're spending money on in homeschool this year. But it's worth it because he loves to write. He said to me yesterday, when are we going to start? The writing program starts on Monday. He said, when are we going to start writing again? I miss it. You know, so that's worth the money. But
as they get older, they can tell you what they want and what works for them, which, you know,
instead of being seven and just looking at you screaming and stomping out of the room, I don't care, I often tell people,
you can buy $900 curriculum for your second grader, but if I were you, I'd really save that money until they're a teenager, because then they'll come to you and they'll be like, I want to do this semester abroad in Japan and it's $8,000. Right. And you'll be like, oh, if only I had saved that money.
Hey, you brought up something that made me want to ask you about something that I know nothing about. I hope you know something about. I hear the term de-schooling all the time. Is it pronounced de-schooling or de-schooling?
I pronounce it de-schooling, yeah.
Do you know anything about that? People recommend it. I don't know anything about it.
Well, the principle behind de-schooling is to have a recovery period between pulling your child out of a traditional school setting and homeschooling them. Rule of thumb is generally 1 to 2 months per year they were in school. Now, that is going to vary by child. Some may need more recovery time, some may need less. And, of course, it depends on their needs and the reason for pulling them out of school. And what that does, that period does, is it gets you and your child reacquainted. So I'm not saying that people who send their kids to school don't know their kids, because it's not that at all. But it helps you get used to being around each other all the time. It helps you assess their learning style. It helps you decide how you want to teach. If you want to do online learning or lectures or whatever, it gives you time to explore that. It also gives the child time to rest, time to let their brain kind of have a break and process everything that's happened in the past know, however long they were in school. And it also gives you time to concentrate on what's important to the child. So, for instance, if your child had a social network at school, they may find that once you pull your child out of school, that social network is gone. So it gives you time to explore other ways to meet those needs or to keep in touch with friends from school. So really, de-schooling is a period of time in which you and your child take off. You don't do structured learning, and you just kind of get a feel for where you are and where you want to go.
So that's interesting because it doesn't sound like de-schooling is no schooling. It sounds like it is really changing the way you – so, you know, my whole – one of the things that drives me nuts with when you start talking about school, and I was a culprit for a long time. I think it's the way we're brought up, at least in the U.S., we think of education as a ticket. And so it's not learning in and of itself, this beautiful journey that our brains get to take as we expand it and explore the world.
Education is the train ride. It's not the ticket. It's the train ride.
So it sounds like de-schooling is getting off the train and exploring education's the ticket, not the train ride. So throwing away the ticket
I think we're confusing ourselves.
Throwing away the ticket and just focusing on what's around you. And, you know, we do all sorts of, we travel. And the first time we took Sean on a big trip, it was to Ireland. I brought two suitcases for myself. One was full of, I kid you not, it was full of school books.
Oh, no.
We're in Ireland. Time to do history in a book.
we're in Ireland, surrounded by Irish history and culture. Let's learn about the revolution. Yeah.
I know. It was
I would have done the same thing.
Oh, yeah, it was so stupid, and my husband would roll his eyes and not say anything because he didn't want to. It took me about 3 days to realize how we went to France first, and it was when I was standing in the Louvre worried museum thinking to myself, oh, we should probably get out of here. Sean's got to go back to the room and do math or something. And I remember thinking, this has got to be the stupidest thought I have ever had while parenting.
Yeah.
So it sounds like
I would have done the same thing.
So de-schooling is recognizing when you're in is just really changing that relationship, right?
It is. It's a recovery period for everybody. That's how I explain it. It gives you, you know, time to chill out for a little bit and see what train you want to ride next, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, I was a stay-at-home mom. So what about moms? Were you always a stay-at-home mom, or did you – well, actually, you and I are stay-at-home moms who work from home. I mean, we both actually work a lot. For anyone who doesn't know, I write. I'm a writer, and I run a very large homeschool group that keeps me really busy. And you have so many irons in the fire, Meg, sometimes I can't keep track of them all.
I can't either sometimes. I'm dropping them, though. So since we added the toddler to the house, some of them have kind of fallen, which is a good thing. That's how it should be. But I work from home now, but I have worked outside of the home while homeschooling, including working full-time.
So how did you do that?
Well, what I tell people is that it's not difficult, but it is a challenge that you have to figure out and overcome. I am lucky in that I have a partner who we are very 50-50 with the kids. And if I was working at night, he would pick up the van from when I was at work, and then he'd go back to the house. So he had the van because we have six kids. We had five then, so they didn't all fit in his car, but he had his car at work. So, you know, we had to juggle it and make it work. It also helped that I had children who are a little bit older. So I could have a little bit of an overlap if I had to go to work. If it was more than an hour, I would pay somebody to come into the house and watch them. What I actually did is I had the older sister of one of my daughter's friends lived in our neighborhood. She would walk over to my house, and I paid her like $5 an hour, and all she had to do was sit by the front door and make sure nobody escaped. So I did that. And now when it comes to the schooling, we got very creative. My older two did online learning. We did Florida virtual school full time. And my oldest did that for 2 years. And then my second did it for 1 year. And then we made other e-learning opportunities happen. And my younger ones, we would do a lot at night. On my days off, I was so tired I couldn't do anything. But in the evening when my husband would come home and we would start getting calm is when we would really do lessons. He, my husband, loves geography. So he would take the kids, the older kids, into one of the bedrooms, and they would do a geography lesson. And, you know, my kids loved that. They loved the time with him, and they loved learning about geography and different cultures. And especially for my third, who was, oh gosh, I think she was 8 at the time. She's almost 14 now. It really sparked a love of travel for her. And I mean, that's all she talks about now. And she's already got a savings account for after high school to go backpack through Europe. It'll be great. So we did a lot of that. We also made extensive use of curriculum on DVD and streaming media. Netflix, Amazon Prime, YouTube, that sort of thing. And 1 year we did an entire American history course, high school American history course, based on the TV show America, The Story of Us, based on that and the book, and then Howard Zinn's People's Guide to United States History. And so that's how we really made it work. And eventually we got to the point, we did that for about 3 years. And then eventually we got to the point where I quit my job and I worked a weekend job. And then now I work from home. So working while homeschooling is absolutely possible. There were times when I couldn't do it without the help of my friends. So having a support system and a support group locally was really, really helpful to me. And we had to get creative, but we made it work.
Hey, I want to give a shout out to your actual isn't it Secular Homeschooling with Netflix and other media? Mm-hmm. Isn't that what it's called? Yes. On Facebook?
Yes.
Yeah, if you haven't, it's a really great resource to
find.
Yeah,
lots of good information.
Oh, it's got a huge number of people on there. Don't you have like 20,000 plus or something? So there's lots of people watching to give you advice on Netflix.
Yes, and it is a secular safe space.
Okay, good. Yeah, you and I are both into secular safe spaces.
Yeah, yeah.
That are friendly to anyone.
Friendly to everyone, and, you know, as long as you behave, we all get along very well.
Yeah, yeah, the no flaming. Hey, so,
no.
Homeschoolers, you know, not all of them, but many homeschoolers are concerned about the cost. You already touched on it a bit. Now, we both know homeschooling can cost a really lot, but homeschooling doesn't, you know, and a lot of that depends on the state you're in. Now, I live in California, and if cost is an issue and you want to homeschool your child, we have homeschooling charters. So in California, there's two ways you can homeschool. One is with a private school affidavit, which I use, and I cobble my own, classes together every year. But you can use a charter school, and I know that's – but a lot of states don't have any – and the charter schools give you money. right. as long as your curriculum, which isn't usually a problem for secular homeschoolers, that their curriculum mm-hmm. meet the state, that our courses that the state feel adequately teach right. the material. But you lived in Florida, and my understanding is Florida doesn't have anything like that. I don't even know. Aren't you in Washington yeah. now? I don't know that that has yeah. anything either. So what about the
yeah,
cost?
Yeah, there's nothing. Well, I used to say homeschooling can cost as much as you want, but I've since kind of revised that, and now I say it costs as much as you need it to. There have been years when my husband was laid off, he was actually laid off and unemployed for 18 months in the early 2000s. And
oh my goodness.
We were surviving off of, unemployment from the layoff and our savings account. I had no money. We had just had a fifth baby. So we did everything for the cost of pencils, tablets, and internet. Everything was online, and I didn't, even if I had like e-workbooks, PDF workbooks, I wouldn't print them out and let my kids write in them. They'd read them off the screen and write in their journal. And, you know, 15 years ago, 16 years ago, these resources weren't around. So when I started homeschooling, my oldest, she's, you know, grown now with kids of her own, but when I started homeschooling her, there were very few resources available online. But today, there are so many, and so much of it is free. You can, if you have, you know, the time and the will, you could put together an entire curriculum for pennies a year if you wanted to. And then, you know, there are also other options that do cost a little bit more money that you might find worthwhile. So then you can prioritize your money. So if you know you have $300 to spend for a whole year and your child's taking advanced math and you don't know how to teach advanced math, it's probably better to spend the money on that than it is something else, you know? So you can prioritize. The main thing is, you know, know where your money is going. Know that what you're buying is going to match your child's learning style and match your teaching style, because if it doesn't, you're just throwing your money away.
I think that is the hardest thing. It's actually, and I think it's why belonging to a group like the homeschoolers or your group with the Netflix, which you can get that, you can stream that, that mm-hmm. I have courses that I can't, I just need to burn them that aren't secular mm-hmm. that yeah. I didn't know or yeah. that, and really not secular. I've got a literature course, but, mm-hmm.
Some of those things are tricky.
If you can't try, if a program can't be tried out online, if they don't have samples, I won't use them. At least at first. I mean, not now, if I've used a course for a couple of years and liked it, obviously I don't need a sample of the third year. But my feeling is, it's not the things that I've spent more money on, I've tended to really vet well. But boy, you can spend $25 repeatedly several times, and that adds up to a lot. It's more than 100.
Yeah.
And that would drive me nuts. Mm-hmm. What was even worse, though, if you spend money, oh, my God, was when you spend money on something and you're like, I spent $25 on this, you are using it. That actually is something, that is a newbie mistake, because you definitely learn somewhere along the line not to do that anymore. The headache over the things I spent $25 on, and he hated, but I hated, especially by the end after fighting for 2 or 3 months. Money, I love the saying, homeschooling costs as much as you need it to. And if you've got the money and you like programs, great. If you don't have the money, it takes a little more of your time, but you can cobble things together.
I don't
and save your money for
money is an excuse for not homeschooling. It can be a factor in not homeschooling or homeschooling, but I don't think money should be the deciding factor. If you really want to homeschool and you don't have any money, you could still find a way to do it if you really want to.
Yes. Yeah, because you see people be really creative. So what do you think has been the real benefit of homeschooling?
Well, you know, I have 6 kids, 5 of them homeschooled. My youngest is 3, so she isn't yet. But, and each one's a little bit different. But overall, if I had to pick one thing for all of the kids, it's individualized instruction. My children are all extremely, extremely different children. And when they had their classroom experience, they were treated like what the state thought they would be like. We didn't have a foreign language option because in their school, 80% of the students already spoke a second language. They spoke Spanish, so it was determined they don't need to offer any foreign languages. Music was only offered up to 2nd grade, that sort of thing. So, you know, I had my oldest child was very interested in community service and helping people and doing things to volunteer. So the courses that she would need the most would be things like writing and reading. And they wouldn't give her the extra things for that, just the basics. You know, here you're going to 7th grade English this year. You're going to 8th grade English this year. When, you know, we brought her back home again, I was able to give her a textbook on business writing, and it actually helped her write a grant with an organization that she volunteers for. She didn't do the writing, but, you know, she helped and followed along, and so we were able to count that as credit. For my second, my son, he is so talented in the arts. I don't know where he gets it from, but he's been taking college classes in design, and he is opening a business where he makes cosplay props, and he sews. You know, he just came downstairs the other night. We were watching a movie. It was about 10:30 at night, and I heard somebody come down the stairs, and my husband and I looked, and here comes my son. He's 18, and he comes down, and he's in this body armor suit. And it was so amazing. It was like the armor that a dragon rider would wear. And I'm like, how did you do this? He sewed it. He designed it. He painted. It was fabulous. So he's really into the art. And he didn't have the opportunity to pursue the arts in school. You know, my third, she loves traveling. She loves writing. She writes something like 20,000 words a day. If I could write that much, oh, my goodness, it would be just amazing. I'm lucky if I get in 500 words. And homeschooling allows her to write as much as she wants or as little as she wants. And she does such impressive research. She is writing a novel that is based on Icelandic history. And she has extensively researched Iceland and Icelandic history. And she's written to the consulate. She's gotten information. She's gotten, you know, pen pals in Iceland. She wouldn't be able to do that if she was in school. And they wouldn't be interested in her project. So the individualized education from their interests to tailoring exactly the materials to how they learn, to being able to pick what math we teach when and how we teach it without that being dictated by the state or the federal government has been the biggest benefit. It has really helped my children to expand and to grow and to become better world citizens.
Well, I actually think, yeah, the individualized class, and sometimes it's not even, I decided Sean was going to learn something that was ended up being a passion after he started, but it was like computer science. I'm like, schools don't teach computer science other than This is how what was the school near us was teaching how you save Word documents. I'm like, there is not a 14-year-old alive that just on the in the United States
I know.
Today.
I may not know how to, but my kids do.
Okay, you know, if you're talking about somebody's grandmother, I'll go okay. But right. You know, this was a crazy stuff. But so they're not teaching these kids coding. It's like, right. Look, that should be, you know, and I don't mean less science and history because you know how I am about those two, but mm-hmm. there's classes that they could spend a little less time on, and so that there's time for like computer science and those sorts of things. It's really, I guess, what I want people to know from what you're saying and what I know in my own homeschool is I would hope that anybody who's homeschooling feels empowered to try and be do things differently, be innovative. And that it's scary to do. When sometimes I felt like I was jumping off a cliff with no parachute while holding my child's hand, and it scared me. I was like, what if I ruin everything for him? And I'm so glad the things that we did that were the most different, and they were academically rich. It's not like they didn't, but even if they weren't, learning doesn't always have to have a reason that you learned something. I hope that individualized, there's nothing like it. There is just nothing like it. Yeah.
So, and we need to remember that, you know, the schools, they have, 5 or 6 hours a day for 180 days a year? We have 24 hours for 365 days a year. We have so much freedom. And when you finally step away from the school model and you realize the new world you have in front of you and the freedom that you have to make these choices and that your child can make these choices too, it opens up. It is a whole new world. And when you finally get to that point, it is the most wonderful feeling because you know what? Maybe things aren't going the way they would in a school, but they're still getting done and they're getting done on our terms. And that is really what a lifelong education is all about, pursuing your interests and learning how to learn. And it makes it more interesting for the kids, so they're more likely to go along.
Learning how to learn, that's a really important concept. And for anybody listening, there's actually a lovely, her name's Barbara, it's not Woodhouse, I can't remember what it is, the last name, but she does a course called Learning How to Learn that is definitely worth taking if your kids are a little older, with your kids, if they're not, without them. It's a Coursera course. So another concern is how to homeschool subjects that you're not good at. Parents don't worry that, what if they're not smart enough? Now, I am a writer, and grammar made me nervous. I really did not love grammar in school, and it was, you know, Sean loved grammar. He loved it. I couldn't even believe it. I'm like, you love what?
I think grammar is presented in an unnecessarily intimidating way in school.
So what do you tell somebody who says algebra, grammar, oh no, you know, whatever their thing is, we all have something,
right? I'm math. I am so math. I was Murphy passed in math in high school so I could go to college. My brain doesn't work that way. So my big concern, here's my daughter, she's 6, and my husband convinces me to homeschool. And I'm like, what about algebra? Well, I had, you know, like 6 or 7 years to work on it. But there are so many options. There's curriculum that you can buy. There are co-ops all over the country now that are groups of parents who have a common need who get together and find a way to provide that need. So for algebra, what we did was four of my friends and I had children about the same age, and we had to do an intensive Algebra 1 so our kids could get into Algebra 2. So we hired a teacher, and we rented a room at the library. We hired a teacher. We split the cost. We made it work, and it ended up being like, it was insanely cheap. It was like $60 for the entire summer for an entire Algebra 1 course with a teacher. So you have those options. There are courses online for everything. You had mentioned Coursera a few minutes ago, and that's one of the most awesome places. It's Coursera.org, Coursera.org, and they have thousands of classes from different universities to pick from. My daughter did oceanography and a geology that way several years ago, and the internet, aside from the online courses, YouTube, oh my goodness, you can learn anything on YouTube. You know, pick your videos, you know, judiciously, and maybe watch the commercials, but you can learn anything on YouTube. Khan Academy, K-H-A-N Academy, they're on YouTube as well, but they have videos on everything. So if you're scared of teaching algebra or grammar, you don't have to teach it. You don't have to. You can hire somebody else to do it. You can buy curriculum. You can turn to the internet. You can buy a book off of Amazon and hand it to your kid and say, here you go. There's so many options. So don't let the fear of one subject or all of the subjects even stop you from homeschooling. If it is the right choice for your family, again, you will make it work. You'll find a way. We're creative. When you homeschool, you have to be creative. So you will find a way to provide these things. And in the end, you'll be better off for it. And your kid will be too.
Well, I there's been a couple of times when I've been one page ahead of Sean.
Uh-huh.
Just one page, but that was all it
yeah.
took. I'll never forget the first time we, because he was in about third or fourth grade, and something came up, and he asked, and it was an academic something, and he said, you know, how, what's the answer, or whatever, and I said, oh, I actually am not sure.
Mm-hmm. And you look it up, right?
Yeah, we looked it up, and I'll never forget the way he looked at me.
I know, son. Mommy doesn't know everything.
Where a comma goes or something. I love putting commas in places they don't go. My special skill.
I ask my husband all of our grammar questions.
Choosing curriculum can be hard.
Yeah.
It's made harder because there are a lot of choices. Well, in some areas for secular homeschoolers, there's a lot. In other areas, there's not as many. But it can be hard because of your child's learning style. So
yes.
I know you have a series of questions that you ask people to help them narrow down what they want. I was hoping that you would share them with our listeners.
Sure. One of the top questions I'm asked is, what is the best curriculum? And I can't answer that. I can't answer that for anybody. Nobody can answer that for anybody. So I have five questions that I ask the person who I'm talking to consider, and I encourage them to take time to think about them. Curriculum choices do not have to be made overnight. Nothing is life or death. So, you know, take your time, research your options. My first question is, does this resource match my child's learning style? There are so many learning styles. There's a couple of big ones. You know, there's kinesthetic and auditory, visual, and there's blends of all of them. If you spend time around your child, eventually you're going to get a good grasp of how they learn most effectively. If you want to help narrow it down, there are quizzes all over the internet. You and your child can answer some questions, and it will say, you know, you lean more towards such and such of a learning style. So the curriculums that you want to look at need to most match that learning style. Now, there needs to be a balance, because if you have a visual learner, you still want a little bit of auditory in there to help develop the auditory. Because when your child's an adult and they go to work, they might not always have the choice of how information is presented to them. But you really want the curriculum to play to their strengths while building their weaknesses. So you want the curriculum to mostly match your child's learning style. The second thing is, does the curriculum or the resource match your teaching style? Now, teaching style is related to learning style only in the parent. So if you're a kinesthetic learner, if you need to do in order to learn, if you get a curriculum for your child that is auditory, you may have trouble with it. Now, there's a little bit more flexibility here, because as adults, we are more able to compensate for our weaknesses. But make sure that it's something that you are actually able to teach, because if you're miserable opening it up, your child is not going to enjoy the material either. Now, my third question is, does this resource or curriculum match how I want to teach? There are so many different ways to teach. My husband is very much the lecture with questions and answers and PowerPoint presentation style of teacher. He, for a living, teaches adults. That's what he does. So that's what he's used to. And he's really, really good at it. I'm not. I am more of a, hey, here's a resource. Why don't you read that? And then maybe we'll watch a video. Or, hey, here's my phone. Why don't you look that up? You know, I'm more hands-off. So you do not want to get a curriculum that's going to require 20 minutes of preparation time every day and all these lectures if you are more of a hands-off type of person, and vice versa, of course. Now, the fourth question is a hard one. It's hard for me, personally. It's, can I realistically afford this resource? Now, nobody likes to talk about money. We don't. There's some curriculums that I would love to buy, but I can't afford $1,200 a person per year, you know? I just can't. Could I put it on my credit cards and make it work that way? Yes. Do I want to? Not really. So realistically, I can't afford this, so I'm going to have to pick something else. And again, never let the fact that you can't afford something make you feel bad, because there are a million resources out there, and there is the perfect resource for you out there. And then my fifth and final question is, does this homeschool curriculum match my worldview? Now, if you are religious, it's fairly easy to find something that's going to match your worldview. If you're secular, like my family, it's a little bit harder. And, you know, there are a lot of what I call tricky curriculums, because they don't come out and tell you if they are religious or secular. They don't, you know, you have written about neutral science before. There are science curriculums out there that won't tell you if they teach creationism or evolution, or they'll say that it doesn't matter. Well, it does matter, especially if you want something that teaches evolution. It does matter. So you need to research. Like you said earlier, check out those sample pages. Go to their website and do a keyword search for anything that might trigger something for you. When I look for secular curriculum, I specifically search for the words Bible, faith, that sort of thing. And that way, if it comes up, I can see if this is a resource that I can use at all, or if it's something I need to skip. So you want to make sure that it matches your worldview, because there's only so much correcting that you can do. And if you have a book that has beautiful pictures, but you have to correct every other sentence in the book, it's not worth your time or your money. So with those five questions, it really helps parents narrow down some suggestions. And then, you know, it takes you from, you know, say 100 options down to, oh, here are five that might work. And then that makes it a whole lot easier to pick one that will work for your family.
So when I actually do a keyword search too, if they sell science products, so I put in the word evolution. Any curriculum manufacturer that sells science products and you can't find the word evolution anywhere is not secular.
No, it's not.
Secular science courses, evolution is not a word that they avoid.
Right.
You know, the other thing that I've been hearing recently is people will go to these courses that leave out everything that a fundamentalist Christian would find threatening or, you know, to their philosophy, but they call them secular because all they did was they just left those things out, but they didn't put in things like evolution, the concepts that we use. The definition of secular that I use is that, and the materials present the facts and theories as would be recommended by a majority of practicing experts in the field that the material, you know, that the materials are looking at. So
that's a good way to define it.
It's you know, that's so lately I've been hearing of people have been getting back to me saying, well, you know, that course that says it's secular, when I said to them, well, you don't really look secular to me. I don't see any evolution. I don't see, it looks like there's a real bias in your history. And the companies have been getting back to them and saying, well, you know, secular is a hard word to define.
Like, it's really not.
Secular, it's not.
Well, that's why I say free of, when I discuss secular things on the Netflix list or something, free of religious bias. It's okay to teach religion in a religions course or in a history course as it relates to the topic, but you can't do it with the religious bias that, you know, saying that one religion's viewpoint is the right one and look at all these other people. But also the omission of something as important as evolution is a major warning sign that this is not a complete resource. This is not a complete curriculum. It may have a few redeeming qualities, but you have to decide if it's really worth it for your family if it's not complete, because you're going to have to get something else to fill in the blanks.
Well, and it's interesting that we got a little sidetracked because it's going to lead into the next topic that we're talking about. So I had somebody come to us this year. I was at a conference, and they wanted to know about my biology course. Would I work with the University of California so that Bio2 doesn't need a lot of things added to it, but it does need some topics added to it so that UCSD would allow homeschoolers to use it for what's called the A to G requirement. That's the required course materials. So course materials have to meet the A to G requirements for the state of California to say, yeah, we'll take you if you use that in high school. And, you know, that using that counts as a biology, you know, the materials we expect in biology. Well, there is a set of standards now that colleges are trying to get schools to adopt, and they're called the Next Gen standards, NEXTGEN. And textbooks that don't meet the Next Gen, so if you have a child who's in high school and you're using a course that doesn't meet the Next Gen standards, there are colleges right now that won't allow you to count that. You know, when they say, so what did you use in your biology course? And if you show them a text that doesn't meet the Next Gen standards, they won't let that. So as far as that college is then concerned, you didn't take biology because it's not one that they consider is an acceptable course for high school. And so people need to be careful about that no matter what their worldview is, because
they do, especially in the sciences.
Well, yeah. And so, by the way, the next gen standard for biology, where evolution comes in, evolution must be, the theory of evolution must be woven through the course, showing the way that it's the unifying theory in biology. So it's really impossible to do if in a course that doesn't teach evolution in all of the various categories. So colleges. People worry about colleges. Now, I separated community college to four-year college only because I think people should know it's easy to get your homeschool kid into community college. In fact, you can do it when they're in high school. And I think that's it, every state. My son
every
is
state in
college
the United States allows it.
This month. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So community college is really easy. But what about the four-year college? You've got a kid, they want to go to a four-year college, you're not following a very standard path, which you and I, sounds like both of us would fall into that category. What about,
we're not standard, Blair.
I'm not worried that whether Sean can get into a four-year college, so, but he can. I just know it. I'm pretty sure we'll see in a year. I'm crying in my
I don't think you'll have trouble.
I blew it. And trust me, I have worried so much if I blew it or not as we did this, the untraditional stuff. What do you have to tell people about, what about getting into a four-year college?
Well, first of all, breathe. Remember, nothing is life or death. You have time. What I suggest is if you have a child who's like, I want to go to a four-year college or I want to go to University of Florida or whatever, what I suggest is when they're in their early teens or even earlier, look at the admission requirements. And this is vital because your state may have high school graduation requirements that you have to meet, but often they do not match college admission requirements. For example, in the state of Florida, you only have to take 2 foreign language credits to graduate, but most of the state universities now, they want to see 3 consecutive years. Some are still 2, but most are 3, and they want you to take a proficiency test. So you have to be aware of the differences. So go to the school's website, check out, they all have homeschooler information pages. And if they don't, just call admissions. But just, you know, go to Google and put in University of California homeschool admission or whatever, and it'll pop up. So look at their admissions and then start working backwards. And the great thing about this plan is it doesn't matter if you have 2 years left of high school or if you have 4 or if you're going to do a 5-year plan. You see what you need to get in at the bare minimum, and then you count back 4 years or 2 years, and you find a way to make it fit. Now, it may mean you have to do 2 maths in 1 year, which is what my oldest child did. She kind of slacked off on math 1 year, and I got tired of fighting her. So her senior year, she had to take 2 advanced maths at the same time. But it worked out. So, you know, you plan backwards, and you want to check the admission requirements at least once a year, at least. In fact, if you want to do it twice a year for each semester, that's even better because they change frequently based on state laws. So you want to make sure that you're working backwards to meet those minimums. Another thing you want to ensure you do, community service. Almost all of the states require some kind of community service for public school graduation. So it's really not any different with the homeschooler. The good thing is that when you homeschool, you have more time to volunteer, and you can usually pick something that you'd like more. My oldest, she volunteered with the Sunshine Village Foundation, and it's like a Make-A-Wish where when people go to Central Florida for their dream trips for sick and abused children, they stay at the Sunshine Foundation. And so she volunteered there. And my next child got all of his volunteer hours in at a theater by teaching children's acting classes. So you want to make sure that you have a list of volunteer activities. Now, each state generally has different requirements. I think in Florida it was 80 or 120. I don't really remember. So you want to make sure you meet and exceed that. So you also want to make sure that your child is getting a, quote, well-rounded education, unquote. So you want to fill them up on electives. You want to, if you can afford it, travel. If you can't afford it, explore your state or your city. You want them to, you know, experience ethnic cuisine, and you want them to go to places that they've never seen before. And you want them to try out new things. For a long time, I was in this group called the Homeschool Adventurers, and every other Monday, we'd pack up the kids and we would do a new adventure. One year we did car mechanics, and the kids learned the basics of changing oil and fixing broken locks and that sort of thing. You know, you want to get those varied experiences in there. And so it shows that your child isn't at home all day just, you know, on their computer or whatever. You want to show that they're out there, they're in the community. And those three things, and then the fourth, keep a portfolio. Many states require them anyhow, but basically a portfolio is nothing more than their transcript, which is a list of the classes they've taken in their grade and samples of their work from throughout the year, papers they've written, math worksheets or whatever, list of books they've read. It doesn't have to be complicated. If they're an artist, put in some of their art samples. So you want the portfolio. So if you concentrate on those four things, and then you get them a good ACT or SAT study guide, and, you know, they're golden. The other thing to consider is many colleges require an interview, but in my experience, homeschool kids are so beyond when it comes to public speaking and talking to people that they don't know. They're so beyond what their schooled peers are that that's very rarely a problem. So, I mean, yes, it takes work, and yes, it takes research. Have your child do the research on the school that they want to go to. Take some of the work off of you and let them own it. Your child won't have trouble getting into college. So many colleges specifically seek out homeschoolers. And I'm not talking about, you know, little private schools, but major universities seek out homeschoolers on purpose because they stay in class longer. They're more likely to graduate. There's something like 30% of all freshmen graduate, but when you look at the homeschool numbers, it's something like 89 or 90% of homeschooler freshmen go on to graduate from college. So they're more likely to retain them.
You know our story. So Sean took, when he was in ninth grade, so I homeschool, private school affidavit, which is essentially I call it homeschooling off the grid. Because I have to tell them that I have a form I have to fill out that says I'm homeschooling, and nobody checks on anything else I do the whole year. That's it.
Right.
I could be not teaching him.
What we do here.
Which I am really teaching him. So 1 year, so ninth grade, he takes a computer programming, quarters of computer programming course through the extension at UCSD, their college level. In the end of January, I go to the mailbox and there is a letter from Stanford for Sean. And I'm like, what the heck is Stanford doing writing to Sean? So I open the letter and they were inviting him to apply to attend a, it's called pre-collegiate seminar, a 3-week pre-collegiate seminar, studying computer programming. And so I start filling it out, and they required a standardized test score, which Sean has never had a standardized test. And a real bump for portfolio. They took him on a portfolio. They invited him back the following year. And last year they invited him to attend a course for, I think it's College for High School Students. Basically, they use spend 8 weeks at Stanford and they see how much they like you and you see how much they like you like them. And he
right.
did not do it because he decided he wanted to have more time for his friends. Because I know we're crazy. It felt a little crazy on the one hand, but on the other hand, I had to see true. That's really what he wanted to do. And my whole thing is, it's not about where you end up going to college. It's about the learning. And so I'm telling that story now because, number one, there are really great colleges that are interested in homeschooling students. And the portfolio was really important. So Sean is not going to take the SAT or the ACT because instead what I did with him is he's going to take a year of college math and college English. So those will be his scores.
Right. Well, that's brilliant.
I just said, you know what, why not, instead of spending the time studying for those tests, why not just take classes that stand in their stead? So you can get really alternative with it. And in California, they pay for your high school student to go to community college. You don't have to even pay for it. Is that the same way in Washington?
Well, that's what we did. Well, in Washington, yes. I think you have to be 16 or 17. But in Florida, you know, where we lived when I graduated my oldest and almost my second, you can start dual enrollment at community college at 12. And my second started at 14, and which at the time was the earliest you could start. They have since changed it to 12 to accommodate a lot of the gifted students. And so he started at 14. And the route that we decided for my oldest was to dual enroll, and because we weren't sure, you know, if she wanted to go to college, and she has some learning challenges, and she wasn't sure if she wanted to go to college, so she dual enrolled and took a study class, like how to study, and she liked it, but she kept failing the entrance exam. See, they don't need the SAT or the ACT. In Florida, it's a different test called the PERT, and she kept failing it. And but that was related to her learning differences and the timing tests and anxiety and all that. So she was actually able to bypass that test completely by doing the portfolio, the transcript, and an interview. And, you know, I was sitting in the interview with her. She was, I want to say, 16. And I got called in after for the interview, and the admissions counselor said, I have never seen a kid who wanted this more. We're going to go ahead and admit her, even, you know, despite the test scores. And so she was able to dual enroll for more classes. And so she did 2 years at the community college. And then, you know, she stopped and got married and started a family. But should she ever want to go to a university, if her path ever takes her there, she has a community college already down, so she can get admission into any state university. And, you know, she never had to take the SAT or the ACT. So there are lots of different options. And, again, you got to be creative, right?
Wow. Yeah. That's the thing. And it's the scariest – it sounds like you weren't as scared by being creative as I was.
Well, no, I was.
I'm so nervous. What if I
was?
Failed?
You know, 17 years in, and I still am at times, I still question myself a lot. So when people's like, or, you know, they tell me that they're questioning themselves, they don't know if they can do this, I'm like, we all go through that. Every single one of us. And that doesn't go away, and you shouldn't, you know, think it should go away, but, you know, you learn to deal with it and kind of like, all right, I'm feeling a little anxious. We're going to, you know, skip on to the next subject. So you learn to live with it and you make it work because, you know, what are your other choices? You either make it work or you don't.
Right. Right. And so this was an awesome talk. We're going to post, I think we already have one, a link to your book, which is for sale on Amazon, correct?
Yes, it's Begin Homeschooling with Confidence. It's like 99 okay. cents. It's really cheap.
Oh, cool. Well, good.
Yeah.
So, all righty. How long is so? Does it cover up basically everything we talked about?
It covers a lot of what we talked about. It is, I call it a guide because it's not super long. It's something you can read in an afternoon or an evening. It covers everything from where to find curriculum to how to deal with relatives who aren't crazy about you homeschooling. it's not overwhelming with information. I wanted to make it basic and to the point and reassuring without being overwhelming. Because if you go to Google and you want to homeschool, when you type in homeschooling, you get so many hits, it is too much information. So the point of the guide is to put the basics out there for you, give you something to think about, and address immediate concerns for the very beginner homeschooler or the person who's thinking about it. And then you go through the basics, let it digest a little bit, and then maybe go to some websites or something like that. And I list a whole bunch of websites in there, and I do believe I have C listed on there for resources as well.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time and agreeing to do this. Tomorrow, I think I'm being interviewed tomorrow with Eclectic
awesome.
Homeschooling. Then we have Kate Laird being interviewed. She's more of her philosophy is unschool when you can, homeschool when you must, sort of a classical child-led. I cannot wait to hear that.
Yeah.
And then Jason on unschooling, mm-hmm. and Emily Cook is going to do Charlotte Mason. So everybody's going to get the next four podcasts are a taste of the various styles and methodologies.
That is so cool for a school choice week. So cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Blair.
All righty. Bye.
Bye.